Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, welcome back to the Football Drop Podcast. We are live. It is late.
Oh yeah.
We are tired, but we are here.
We are a pair of sweaty men right now. Proper sweaty men. So we're doing it on Teams because we've just come back from football. Just because unfortunately I was working late. My hair looks like I've just got out of the shower as well. It's got like, look at that, proper like, that is like swimming pool hair.
Okay. You are looking fit.
Thanks, mate. I do not smell fit. Let's put it that way.
Me neither. This is disgusting.
When I said well played today, I slapped your back, and it was disgusting.
It's rank. It is awful.
Rancid. Rancid.
We got another bumper episode, don't we? So I think we need to just get straight back into it. Are you all right? Are you good?
Yeah, I'm all good, mate. I'm all good. How are you?
I'm all good, mate. I'm all good.
Let's weekend. Get into it. We saw really Big Tommy D, though, didn't we?
So this is what I was just going to come on to. So yesterday we I came around yours early, didn't I, to record this podcast, and we sat and we watched the football, and then we interviewed Johnny, who's on in a bit, and now we're rushing through because we did. Do what we agreed to do yesterday, and then we went on a bit of a mandate, didn't we?
We did indeed. Had a lovely time, couple of beers. We held hands at the end, so thank you. It was a lovely time. Lovely time.
It was brilliant. Yeah, I really enjoyed walking down the pier with you. It was
fuck off. We didn't do that. Just FYI, just for full clarification. Stop laughing, you weirdo. Right,
what we did under the pier was
weekend. No, let's just keep cracking on. Let's just move along quickly. We had a hat-trick of hat-tricks this weekend.
Mate, we had an incredible weekend of football. It was probably the most exciting weekend of football we have had this season. And that is bold.
And only two teams failed to score out of 20. Which was, that was quite interesting. Quite interesting indeed.
It's quite interesting, yes.
But can we start, obviously, with the first game? Because I've got a bit of a beef with this.
Okay.
Can someone, when I say someone, I mean any listener that's got an explanation for this, or yourself, Will, how the fuck is Luton Town and West Ham Friday night football worthy?
Well, yeah, you stumped me there. To be honest, is Friday night football like a proper thing now? I thought it was like Sunday afternoon was the blockbuster one.
Yeah, it is, but Now, Friday night, that's the start of the weekend. You want a bit of a banger of a game, but here we go. Football
first
weekend
game at Kenilworth Road.
Yeah, that's just do it on a Saturday lunchtime. Early kickoff. That'll add a bit more spice into it, because it's like, ooh, never back the early kickoff. Ooh, ooh, ooh.
I think that's the second or third time you said something about adding spice to it tonight. Is that your new little phrase?
I don't know. I think it's because I've just had some spicy pasta, to be fair. And my mouth, I'm not going to lie, my mouth's on fire a bit.
Do you know what is really funny? It's just looking at you, because I know a lot about you today, and you are fucked. Like, you are the most tired man that there is on this planet today. And I mean this with all of my heart, because I love you, bro. But you look rough.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie, I feel it. However, I just want to sort of shame you a little bit here, because I'm still not yawning on a podcast, am I? But no, genuinely though, Luton Town 1, West Ham 2. Great game. Bit of a flare at the end, obviously, with a very, very late goal for Luton.
First Premier League goal at Kenilworth Road.
Yeah, I think this game as well, it kind of showed that there is definitely a bit of hope there for Luton. You know, they can definitely, home form is going to save them if they can stay up. I think that's going to be, everything's going to rely on that. They'll nick one or two wins throughout the season away from home, for sure. There'll be a freak win, like there was one later on the Saturday games we'll go into. But they'll get a few shocks, for sure.
And just to interject there, I think as well, if they look around the clubs around them, they'll be thinking, "We got this. We could do some good shit here."
Yeah, 100%. I mean, out of the three teams that have been promoted, they've got 1 point, which is Sheffield United. Mm. So it's. Although they've had a bit of a dodgy start, I know Luton and Burnley will have played a game less, of course, but it's still there. They're not really falling behind yet. You know, Bournemouth are still sat there on 2 points. Wolves are on three. I mean, Newcastle, surprisingly, are only on three. I think they'll obviously come good very soon. It's still very early.
Might do.
But, yeah, so I don't think it was a very entertaining game either from the bits that I watched, but a 2-1 win for West Ham, which we both predicted, which was unusual.
We did predict that, yeah. That was. We don't often agree.
Oh, here we go.
But in that occasion, we did.
We did.
But I think you just led yourself nicely on then to the Brighton-Newcastle game, I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think.
Yeah, sure. Big win.
Sure thing. What a big game. Win. What a game, mate.
Evan Ferguson, though. Yeah, Brighton are incredible, you're right. But Evan Ferguson, man. 18
this is
years
what I mean.
Old.
This is why Brighton are incredible, because they just pluck these players out of absolutely nowhere. Like, what was he? Is he 18, 19?
Yeah, he's 18. 18 years old.
18. And he just comes in, he scores a hat-trick against Newcastle, who are, like, one of the top six clubs in the country at the moment.
Yeah. Well, I suppose technically at the moment.
Arguably, you could say Brighton are in there.
If you look at the table, they're not at the moment, but I know what you mean.
You know what I mean, though.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Surely you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
It was a good hat. It was a good hat trick as well, wasn't it? And then a little consolation from Callum Wilson at the end there.
Yeah, it was a good hat-y. I think Brighton needed that win as well. Newcastle going to be a little bit lower confidence going into the international break now as well. A good time for them to regroup. And then just be like, right, bit of a shaky start. Come on, lads, let's go. They've got their draw for Champions League and things as well now, so the excitement can be, you know, built up a bit. Like, come on, lads, let's get the Premier League games done. Let's vote, and then we can go on to this. It's exciting. It's a good challenge. Let's crack on.
Yeah. And I think, you know, if you look at the two clubs, Brighton will come away with absolute confidence going into. I mean, we've got the international break now, but going into Europe, Brighton will be thinking, "Yeah, fucking hell, we can do this." Newcastle will be looking at Nick Pope, thinking, "Ooh, you had a bit of a dodgy game. Like, overall, they wasn't good for Newcastle at all. I think maybe a one-off, but yeah."
Pope hasn't had a good start. He looks a little bit shaky. I think, like, his decision making hasn't been quite on point for what he was last season.
so consistent last season that you hold him up into high esteem. But yeah, not really showing us what he can do.
He's not, but there's plenty of time left in the season. What game's next?
Season for a reason. City
season
Fulham?
For a reason. Mate, what game? However, VAR right strikes game. Again.
VAR, yeah. I mean, it could be Miri VAR-mas again today because he has had a bit of a shocker over the weekend, hasn't it?
It's just everything, mate. And so many people now are calling for it to just be like, let's just call it a day. Like, you're not using it right. You've got all this technology in the world. You're not using it correctly. The people that are using it are just fucking idiots. They're not football people. So, they have no idea what they're doing.
So this was at 1-0, wasn't it? So Alvarez got a fucking great goal. Then Ream knocked one in. Then Ake headed the ball. Akanji was in front of the Leno, was in front of him.
Yeah, blocking his sight completely.
Moved out of the way, and in an offside position, but was deemed to not be interfering with play.
Mate, right, how can you not interfere with play? He's jumped over the fucking ball.
Yeah, exactly.
He literally jumped over the fucking ball in front of the goalkeeper. You can't be any more involved with play unless he's had a shot at the goalkeeper. That's the only way he can be more involved with play at that point.
I know, mate. I can't understand. You know, if they go in at half time 1-1, I could still see Haaland scoring a hat-trick. I'm not going to lie. But
Fulham will have confidence.
Different.
Yeah,
exactly.
100%.
That could be
the
difference.
Especially it's 4 minutes into added time in the first half. If that wasn't anything, they would have blown the whistle, go in, and they're like, right, second half, we can do this. We've done it in the first half. Come on, lads. Whole different tactic. But
Foden
massive.
Quality. Shout out for Foden, mate. He was good.
Mate, Foden's insane. But Haaland, he's got 5 hat-tricks in 35 games?
Yeah, and I think, what is it, in those 35 games, he scored like 42 goals now.
Mate, it's just ridiculous. The guy is just out of this world. Out of this world.
Not, yeah.
Was it Hattie? And planet, he got an assist as well.
Yeah. He's probably directly been involved in over 50 goals in like 35 games now, which is fucking insane.
In supposedly the hardest league in the world. And he's literally just making it into a playground. Absolutely.
Although I did see a good article. I'll have to find it. We'll talk about it next week. So just for all of our listeners, we're going to do a massive Euro roundup next week. We've had a few guests and stuff, so we have gone off. So I apologise for all you European followers. But next week we'll do a proper one during the international break. We'll catch up and then we'll add it in to our routine. It's just where we've been a bit up and down with guests and things like that. But we've got a banging guest on later. Stay tuned.
We have indeed.
But yeah, there was an argument that the German league is fucking out of this world and is superior to the Premier League, which I'm interested in actually, and I'm going to make a case for that. By the end of the season, I'm going to make a case that the German league is better than the Premier League. Yes, you heard it here first.
Wow.
From the man in the Rangers shirt.
That is contentious. Yeah, can I just point out, actually, you're wearing your Rangers shirt. I'm wearing my Celtic shirt. And Celtic won at the weekend. But football tonight, I believe you won.
I did.
I mean, you did have an extra player.
I did. You did. Yeah, it was all me. Also, just a shout out, because I did call us the jockstraps earlier, which he was not too impressed with.
No, what I wasn't impressed with was the signals and actions you were doing in the car across the road from me while I was on the phone driving up there. Parked up, you're still talking jockstraps and doing the sort of sword fighting actions with your fingers. It was creepy. Please don't repeat that again. Yeah, no, stop. Just stop.
Should Brentford... we move on to Chelsea Forest? Because I've been looking forward to talking to that.
Oh, okay. Was that next? Was that? I thought it was Brentford Bournemouth. Okay.
Not in
Chelsea
my list.
Chelsea Forest. Go on then.
Mate, Chelsea were... How do I say this?
It's 4 letters, mate. Starts with S, ends in T.
Shit.
Yeah.
They had 21 shots. 2 of them hit the target.
And Havertz plays for Arsenal now.
And Havertz We'll come on to that. Yeah, first place for Arsenal. It was a very strange one from Chelsea. They couldn't seem to just like I don't know, just hit the target, I assume.
It's weird. Is
what I'm trying to say, really, because Alanga, mate, that was a good goal from Alanga. Awani was the supplier there, so he's lost his run of games, but scored consecutively. I think you understand that goal.
Yeah, message. I got it. I'm not sure the listeners will, but I spend, unfortunately, too much time with you to understand. Hang on, can I just say, actually, our WhatsApp conversation the other day was letters, and I understood what you were talking about.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, that really made me laugh.
What was it? WWSW.
No, it was WD. Well done.
Well done. Well YG. Done. Yes, geez.
Yeah.
Sigwan Sigala. I just remember that, like, what a dick. Yeah.
Absolute morons.
Yeah, sorry. So Chelsea, what Forest have got this season compared to what they didn't have last season is a bit of pace on the counter now.
What, mate? So I was just going to go, they've spent over $1 billion since Todd Bowley arrived last summer.
We're talking about Forest, mate.
Oh, sorry, was you?
Yeah, we're saying that Forest... Yeah, he wasn't listening, was he?
No, to be honest, I wanted to say what I wanted to say. Thought you was talking about it, and I just thought, I'll just lead nicely on that.
So when I said what Forest have got this season compared to what they didn't have last season was more pace on the counter, and then you dropped the bomb that Forest have spent £1 billion under Todd Bowley. I didn't realise he owned Forest.
No, Chelsea. Okay, right, let's go back to your point.
No, we're done now. Yeah. We're done.
Forest team have settled in nicely together. They have done extremely well in getting that team to gel. They've signed like 40 players in since the beginning of last summer. But what they have done is they've kept that core team. So Awani, now Alanga,
Morgan Gibbs-White, Worrell.
That's him, yeah.
Also, they've got Bolly in as well, who's solid at the back. Good Prem experience.
Yeah. Very good point there, mate. I was hanging on every word that you just said there.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you want to move on to next game then?
Are we not? So that's it. We're not going to talk about my point about Chelsea spending $1 billion. No, okay, fair enough.
No, in all seriousness, Chelsea has spent over £1 billion now. Since transfer deadline day, they got another signing over the line. It's just insane.
That was a weird signing as well, wasn't it? Palmer from City.
Yeah, it is. I mean, he is highly rated. And I think this has got to be his season. Well, yeah. But he's young, he's English, he's won the under-21 Euros, he's just come off the back of a treble winning season with Man City. That's a winning mentality coming into their team. Some of the players that haven't won much, or haven't won anything. Thiago Silva obviously is a bit of a serial winner over the years. Raheem Sterling's been there, he's won it. So they've got a few sort of winners in their team now, which may help shift that mentality a little bit, I don't know. But obviously Cole Palmer is still young, so he's still hungry, but he still knows what it's like to win.
Yeah,
it could be a shrewd signing for them. But the problem is, you've got Madueke, who plays on the right, which is Palmer's kind of position, right coming inside. And Madueke's done really well.
Well, they've got a couple of players who play out that in that position and are doing okay. So, we'll see. They've obviously brought him in for a reason, so I assume that they'll be sticking him in the team. Yeah,
the Manchester spending that much money on him as well.
Mm. Definitely one for the future, though. He does look quality, to be fair.
See what he does.
But Chelsea, we should, yes, sadly. So
yeah, they weren't great. They weren't great at all. One of their fans was slating it, saying that Thiago Silva, look, we love him, but he's just past it now. He can't keep up with the team. Blah 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 blah. like, we love you, but you've got to be dropped kind of thing. And then he replied, he's like, well, we played in the back four for most of the game, so you don't need a back five just to cover for me. But that's cool. Thanks for your opinion, mate. I was like, yeah, he's got a point. He's got a point. But yeah, what's next on your list? Because yours is clearly in a different order to mine.
Clearly, I've got Burnley, Tottenham.
Oh, that is next on mine. I don't want to talk about this too much.
No, it's becoming quite annoying, isn't it?
Yeah, Big Ange is doing big things.
Okay, so I am just gonna calm you down a little bit because yeah, Tottenham played really well on Saturday. I'm not gonna take anything from them. Son, Maddison, they all played really well. Tottenham looked much better without Richarlison, I must say.
Yeah, they really do.
Because Son in the middle, Hattie. And Solomon out on the wing, he was really good, man. So was your doggy. But Burnley did score two goals.
Yeah, they did.
You just sat back in your chair, put your head back, and I thought you'd fallen asleep. Burnley did score two goals, and it is quite early under a new manager's reign. So, I am enjoying Tottenham's football. Oh, that was really hard to say. But I would just err on the side of caution and see how far he can go with it because it's new manager. He's got him playing okay.
Yeah.
Just calm down.
It's new manager bounce at the moment still, I think. Wait until, 15, 20 games into the season. Then see where they are with obviously other different sort of competitions and whatever. And well, I mean, other competitions, FA Cup, because it's about the Carabao.
Not in Europe. Oh, well, exactly, yeah.
So, weird team choice, actually. I don't want to go too much, but weird team choice for the Carabao Cup. 10 changes.
Yeah, I agree. And they were playing Fulham, weren't they?
Yeah, which you'd think surely you got a little bit stronger, but no, apparently not. Apparently no, not.
I agree.
But big win for them. I didn't see that coming, actually, that sort of scoreline.
No, but when you saw the way they played, I mean, James Maddison is just something else in
Did
that
you realise how good James Maddison is?
When he was at Leicester?
Yeah.
But yeah, mate. Yeah. He was quality.
But, like, for me, I always knew he was good, but now he's doing it in a shit team and making them look good.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he did that with Leicester.
I'm teasing. He's linking up with Son, with Kulusevski, Richarlison to a degree, but Solomon as well. He's just pulling the strings in that sort of midfield / attacking midfield role. He's just doing whatever the hell he wants to do. And he's really got them playing like some really good football. I think he could be a really good signing. I think he could potentially become one of the signings of the season if he stays fit.
Yeah.
That's a big if.
Yeah, I agree. And I will just say, Burnley were very poor. They do need to improve their defensive play. There was a few things that you've seen where, they got two at the back and they're not covering, they're not getting close. So, yeah, I would suggest that they certainly need to look at that defensive area and keep building. Company keeps saying, oh, we're learning. Mate, you need to start learning a bit quicker because the time is not on your side. Once you're on that downward spiral,
it's hard.
It can come at you fast, yeah. Brentford, Bournemouth next, mate?
Yeah, 2-2.
2-2, yeah.
A Desmond, as some may say.
A Desmond. I was expecting a Brentford win there, but actually Bournemouth played really well.
Yeah, it's taken really well, Bournemouth a little while to get going.
Yeah.
But they have got a good team. The manager is supposedly a decent manager, not that I know much about him, but this is a guy that worked under Pep, isn't it? Is that right?
He was, I think he did work under Pep, didn't he? And then he went into management.
Yeah, is this Pep's assistant?
Is it Zaragoza?
No, that's the Leeds manager, isn't it? I'm getting confused with who's who now. But I know that when they signed him, I was like, who the hell? I think we actually did an episode on it. I was like, who the hell is this guy? But he has got them, you know, playing some decent football still. I do think they'll be fine throughout the season, but Brentford have been playing well, so to get a draw, especially away to Brentford, is a good, solid result.
Yeah, I think so. I think Brentford were a bit unlucky. I think they hit the post about four or five times. So they were Brentford. A bit unlucky. Yeah, but no, Bournemouth looks okay. The goal from Tavernier into Brooks, for Brooks to finish off, was a neat little finish, and Brooks' first goal back since being off with cancer. So yeah, fair play to him.
It was nice to see. That's a feel good goal, isn't it? That one.
Yeah,
one of those like everybody like that. Even Brentford fans probably like, oh, why'd you score? But I don't mind if you. I can let that one slide.
Yeah. And Buemo was not quite on his top game, but did get his goal in the end there. So yeah,
he did good goal from the end to the start.
To be fair.
Palace Wolves 3-2.
Whoa! You've missed Sheffield United and Everton, mate.
Oh, I thought we'd done that already.
No, mate.
Oh, that was another Desmond. Sheffield United's first points of the season.
My point on this is, I think that just shows how bad Everton are. I mean, Beto looked all right. Danjuma looked okay. Decore looks all right as well. Oh, but Everton are just shit.
Yeah, they really are.
Back there, James Tarkowski, he looks all right, but the amount of mistakes he makes.
But I think that's because he hasn't got that solid player next to him. When Cody was playing last season, them two looked okay together. And then obviously Cody got dropped, slight different formation and stuff. And now this season they don't seem to have a settled back line. And I think that's what always causes a lot of the issues. You know, Pickford is Pickford. You know what you're going to get pretty much every week now. He's sorted out his club form. You know, he's kind of taken his England form to club now. You know, there'll be one or two mistakes throughout the season, but generally he'll be pretty solid. But if he's not got a set back four in front of him, he doesn't know what they're going to do.
Mm. Yeah, no, I completely agree. I mean, Pickford kept him in it. They would have lost Pickford. He was fucking... He was outstanding, especially that double save at the end there.
Yeah,
he did
really well.
You know, but how long does he stay? I worry for Everton.
I think if Everton get relegated, Pickford goes.
I think there'll be a few players that go there.
Yeah, 100%.
It'll be a mass exodus.
Well, I think it needs to be. Yeah. There's a change in the guard then, isn't it? Because they're sort of holding on by the skin of their teeth at the moment.
Yeah.
They've done that for three seasons, I think. They've been scraping at the bottom and scratching around for points.
Kind of since Ancelotti left, really, wasn't it? They had quite a good season under him. If I remember rightly, they had a pretty good season under him, started doing okay. Mm. And then since then, it's just been, rubbish. Absolutely awful for them. And I don't, you know, I mean, you can sort out the defence, but they won't spend that money on their team. So the defence needs work. Because they put in, you know, if Beto isn't the man for them, then they're not going to get those goals. But I mean, Danjuma, I don't know, mate. It's a funny one. But 2-2, poor game.
Desmond, can we move on to the Palace Wolves one now? Is that right? Do you mind? Yeah, 3-2.
Go on. Yeah, go on.
3-2. Palace are doing well. They're looking good. Wolves, I think we said it for the last few weeks, I think they're going to be in trouble. You know, Nunes has gone now as well. He's gone to Man City. Was it 50-odd million or something? 55 million?
Yeah.
Who had a blinding season last season. I'm not sure what's going to happen with them. I do worry. But Palace are looking pretty solid. You know, good attacking play, scoring a few more goals. They're normally pretty tight at the back, so to concede two was a bit of a surprise. But I think that's because they were just attacking a bit more, and obviously there's more space in behind naturally.
Mm. Yeah, I completely agree. I thought that the way they played was absolutely outstanding. I mean, Eze was outstanding.
He wants to be called Eze now, just FYI.
Oh, it's Eze. Sorry. Yeah. Eze, right, okay. Eze was fucking outstanding. I thought Edouard had probably his best game in a Palace shirt.
He's come back in this season, isn't he? It's all of a sudden like, oh, yeah. I remember how to score goals, lads. I didn't realise you wanted to score
really got
goals.
Playing well. Yeah. I mean, Lerma's come in and he's done a really good job. They've got a good team. I'm still not sure from how Ayew continuously gets a game, but, you know.
I think he must do a lot of work off the ball that you just don't appreciate or realise. That's got to be the only way, or just create space for other players or something. Because I totally agree with you. Whenever I've watched Palace, I'm like, what does he do?
Not really sure, to be honest.
chasing it down, putting the pressure on, leading that pressure. I don't know. He doesn't even get many assists.
It's a weird one. And Mateta as well. Special shout out for Mateta. He was very good.
Mate, he turned into prime Ronaldinho. That pass, like, how did he do that?
Yeah,
just honestly, like he's just turned it up a notch, isn't he? And then we had
very good,
Super
yeah.
Sunday.
Oh, hang on. So I was just going to say, think the Wolves are looking, you know, for the amount of money they spent, which isn't a lot, and the amount of money they've received, and the players that got left. They're not doing too bad. They've still got a couple of goals. I think Huang needs to play. He needs to be starting a little bit because he's getting a couple of goals. Neto looks pretty good as well with his two assists. So I'm not too worried about Wolves personally. I think there are worse teams down there below them, which will keep them up, I think, for me. And that's probably what Wolves were going for when they let Leipzig go at the start of the season.
That's a risky tactic, though, isn't it? If you're there or thereabouts, you can have a bit of a dodgy run of form, low confidence. You're dragged into that so quickly.
Yeah.
You know, Everton, I think it was last season before, were worse than the bottom three. They were playing worse football by far. They just somehow were lucky, grabbed a couple of goals and got a few wins, and all of a sudden it was like, oh, we're okay now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a risky move, that, but we'll see how they do throughout the season. But I'm keeping an eye on that because I think they could be a shock relegation, that one.
I don't think it would be too much of a shock. I just personally think that they'll do all right and get out of it.
Fair enough.
Do you want to move on to the Scousers?
Yeah, I was quite surprised at this. 3-0. I thought Villa would do better than that.
I thought Villa would get a goal. I predicted 3-2. I thought it would be quite a bit closer than it actually was. Szoboszlai, good golf, well, quality goal in front of the cop there. Really good goal. Matty Cash was unlucky.
Yeah, he was. You feel bad. You felt bad for him. I did feel bad. Yeah. Salah, lovely finish.
Yeah, great finish. Yeah,
and Nunez scored
again. Hit the bar a few times, didn't he?
Yeah,
Nunez didn't score.
I thought he did.
No, Szoboszlai, Cash, and Salah.
Ah, oh, I thought it was Nunez that got the... I didn't realise it was down as Cash. But Nunez is looking... I saw a stat, actually, about Nunez compared to Suarez. Same amount of games, same amount of goals at this point in their Liverpool careers. Yeah. So I was like, oh, I remember Suarez being a lot better than that. But I think it's because he had that insane season where he scored like 30 goals, didn't he? And I'm just like, wow. He scored, about eight of them all, say, against Norwich in two games. Your favourite team.
My favourite team, yeah.
Your favourite team. Remember
well.
Massive, massive win for Liverpool, that. Confidence Villa again, isn't it?
It was a big win, yeah. Villa seem very hit and miss this season, don't they? They're either going to score, they're going to smash five against you, or they're going to just capitulate and concede a few. Interest in that Alexander-Arnold positional play where he sort of comes into the middle of the pitch, almost as a central defender, and then just pings the ball over. like his passing is outstanding, but it's just interesting how they've how Klopp's had to like adapt the team, because quite a new team that he's got now, and he's pulling him into the inside as to almost like a defensive number 10. It's weird,
It's a bit of a an odd one, but I don't know. Yeah, he kind of goes as a deep line playmaker almost, doesn't he? Like a CDM without the defensive side. And he's a defender by trade, weirdly. But yeah, he sprays balls, doesn't he? Like, all around the pitch, and they're so accurate.
It's almost like building a team around a player. They found their player. They just need to find what works best for him. Defensively, you ain't going to get the best out of him. But he can put his body in the way, but essentially he's just there to spray balls about, like you say.
Yeah, play to his strengths. I think that's the key thing for them. They can play to his strengths. Mm. I think they're onto a winner. And, you know, whenever he does that, they're doing well and they're playing well and they look so much better with him.
What do you think about the Salah situation? Do you think he'll...
Oh, this is tough, isn't it? I don't see him going, but I can understand from the money aspect as well as that culture. Obviously, religion plays a big factor in all of this as well.
Yeah, I agree. That's a very good point, actually, you've made there on religion. I completely see that.
And 200
million.
200
million. Lots turned down on it.
Yeah, if you're Liverpool, like, I know they're trying to get back in the Champions League and things like that, but 200 million for a player who's 31, nearly 32. Like, don't get me wrong, Salah, you cannot replace him. Simple as that. There's no way you can replace him in that team. You'll have to play a slightly different formation or style of play to be able to replicate any form of what he offers the team. But 200 million or hedge your bets and see if you can get into the Champions League and top four places. Oh, it's difficult.
Yeah, that is the predicament that they're up against for an aging player, but still in his prime. So, yeah, that will be interesting. But I think it was Klopp who was having a little moan about the Saudi transfer window closing after every other. I think they're the only ones that's open now. I think everybody else is closed. It's just theirs that's open, and that is dangerous for every other league.
It is, but you can say no. It is dangerous, but you can say no. So he's only saying this because he's worried that the owners might say yes. Which, don't get me wrong, rightly so. He's going to be worried, of course. But don't moan about it.
No. No, I do agree. I think he'll go, though. I think Salah will not be a Liverpool
this window.
By the end of this window. Yeah. I can see that big bid coming in and Liverpool going, sorry, but we're going to have to take it. I could be wrong.
But do you think Salah wants to go?
I think it could be lured, yeah. I think that religious point that you've pointed out there is actually a really good one. I wonder if there's something there, but also I think the money will be too much to take. And also, if a club accepts a transfer bid, it's kind of an indication to that player that you're not as wanted as maybe you thought you were. So if it was me,
I see your point.
And I'm Salah, and they say they accept a bid for 200 million, I'd be like, oh, well, you obviously want me to fucking go then, so I'll fucking go.
Yeah, no, I see your point. It'll be interesting to see the sort of conversation we're having next week about him and see where we are.
But of course, his agent, I've forgotten his name, has come out and said that, you know, Salah won't be leaving Liverpool. This was a few weeks ago now, so, you know, it's not. Things change, but yeah, that might be something to cling on to if you're a Liverpool fan.
Yeah, I think he's never going to be able to get that cult hero feeling over at Saudi what he has at Liverpool.
I agree.
So it depends what he's after and what motivates him, I suppose. But should we move on to the final game?
Let's do it, my man. Let's do it.
What an entertaining game!
Certainly not least. Well, I don't know. Was it an entertaining game? I think there was an entertaining couple of minutes around the sort of 26, 27, 28 minutes. And then there was an interesting end to the game. Like, other than that, it was kind of Arsenal attacking Man United and then Man United attacking Arsenal and nothing really much happening with that.
I think there was some good play, though, from both teams, admittedly. Yeah. But I do think we did deserve to win. I don't care what any United fans say. Obviously, there's another VAR call we'll go over in just a sec, but I think Arsenal deserved to win that.
I think Arsenal were the better team, yeah. I think we would naturally say that, but I think if we can put our, you know, hands on our hearts, I would completely take, trying to take the bias out of it, I would say Arsenal were the better team. So should we go through some of that? So first, you know, first of all, Rashford, that was a quality goal. Ben White out of position, mate. Saliba out of position, kind of.
It started.
Quality goal.
Yeah, it started from Arsenal's cock up in midfield. Yeah, shitty pass back, intercepted by a United player. I can't remember who it was. Passed it.
Eriksen.
And then what a ball into Rashford, though. Need to give that some credit. You're right, Ben White was out of position, but Rashford, to finish that, it was just quality. It was absolute quality. And every player, like the celebrations annoy me. Rashford's one annoys me because there's not much to it, but it's really smug and it irritates me. But as an England fan, I'm like, yeah, well done. You know, great goal, blah, 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 blah. As an Arsenal fan, I think, oh, you fucker, fuck you. But I feel sorry for Ramsdale a little bit with that. Because if he had slightly bigger hands, that's a save.
Yeah. Or just slightly to his left. You know, it's the small margins. He could have palmed that onto the post rather than the inside of the post, inside of the net. So yeah, I agree.
But I don't want to take it away from Rashford because it was a quality finish, and he beat the keeper fair and square. But I think if you're a keeper, I'd rather not get my fingers to it and be like, yeah, it was a great goal. Rather than get my fingers, everyone will then say, oh, he should have saved that. He got his hand to it, he should have saved that. And, you know, when you look at it, there's no way he could have.
He got enough to it that he'd done all he could do. That's all you can ask from your keeper.
Yeah.
And then 35 seconds later.
Mate, what a goal that was. Just so simple play. You do not give Ødegaard. Yeah, I was just about to say, you don't give a player that much space, do you?
Mental, absolutely mental. And then there was a couple of VAR calls, weren't there? So the first one was the pen on Havertz, which for me, again, I've looked at it with like no, like trying to get rid of all bias, and I cannot understand how that has not been given.
Wan-Bissaka
clips his ankle and he falls over. I mean, they're talking about play acting and stuff. I couldn't see it. I thought it was a penalty.
Yeah, I thought it was. And I've watched that replay so many times.
Me too.
And there's contact. Like, I don't think he's gone down that easy because he's going at some pace to get that ball as well. You've got that forward momentum. Any sort of shove, if it knocks you off balance slightly, which it did, it's knocked his sort of leg and his ankle inwards. So he's going to lose his balance slightly and you're going to go down. And when you're in the penalty box, every player is going to go down a little bit easier anyway.
Yeah.
You know, if they feel contact, they're going to go down. But it didn't look like he was diving to the floor. It was, I'm just kind of going to let myself fall here rather than a dive. And I think that's different because there was contact. But how they overturned that, I don't know. I just do not know.
No. I would love to find that. I mean, I'd love to find out how that was adjudged. But also, I watched it again on Match of the Day 2 and watched, you know, just watched some more analysis on it. And they didn't even fucking mention the penalty. I thought it was a bit weird that they didn't analyse that. But anyway,
because of the next incident,
they analysed the offside for Garnacho's goal heavily. So I'll tell you my thoughts and then you can go. So
go on.
I think it's offside because the rules state that that's the angle that you go for. So I think it is offside.
Yeah.
But judging by the rules, I can see Ten Hag's argument that if you look at it from a different angle, then it might not be offside. But you go by what the rules say the angle is, and it is offside. And I think if you draw the lines, it's still offside on that angle that Ten Hag has suggested that we all look at. So I think the right decision.
Yeah, I agree. And I think as much as we don't really back VAR too often, there's only so much VAR can do because of the amount of cameras that's there. Unless you've got, you know, a couple of hundred cameras around the stadium covering every single angle possible, you're never going to be able to get that perfect. You're never going to get that perfect. So whatever angle you're working off, it's got to be within those margins of, you know, a couple of feet, couple of metres, whatever it is at the moment. But I don't see Ten Hag's point of he's onside. I can't see it, because every angle you can see, that part of his body is ahead of the Arsenal player. So, I mean, don't get me wrong, quality, neat finish. I know it's obviously when we were talking to Johnny, we were sort of pointing at the screen next to us like, oh, no, United have scored. And it was like, oh, okay, this is not good.
Mm.
And then it wasn't.
Yeah, I thought that. What did you think of the penalty on? Is it Hoyland? Hoyland, isn't it? Yeah, Hoyland.
Do you know what?
Big shout.
Sorry, I didn't see it. I think I was
okay.
My attention wasn't there then. I haven't looked at it fully back after with the analysis yet.
Yeah, I've had a little look at these sorts of things. But anyway, it doesn't matter. So,
little dig there, cheers, mate.
No. I didn't mean that. I can see. I've seen those given, so I can see. I can understand the argument of that. But for me, I think he was just using his body to get Hoyland out of the way. So I can see why it wasn't given. But I think another ref, another day, that would have been given, and there probably wouldn't have been too much of an argument about it. But I mean, certainly, if you're not giving the Havertz one, you ain't giving that one. No chance.
And I think that probably swayed the decision a little bit, to be honest with you. That would have come into the ref's mind of, well, and that's not given, and I thought it was.
I think so. And then, of course, we had Declan Rice score
in the
6th minute.
Mad finish.
Great finish. Came off Phil Jones, who was partnered with Maguire at the end there. Which,
that was...
questionable for me.
Phil Jones, he's left. You mean Johnny Evans?
It's not like me to get a player's name wrong.
No, not you. Legend. What a weird weird defensive partnership there. Did not see that one coming, and I'm sure United fans will not be better pleased seeing that too often this season.
No, and there was shouts, weren't there, for there was a foul from Gabriel on Evans. Other way. It was more of a foul on Gabriel than it was on Evans. But you know, Ten Hag was upset with that, and then there was no arguments about Jesus' finish. He'd never scored against Man United. What a goal,
mate! Yeah, what a goal to do it. I just want to say that with Declan Rice's goal, did you have you watched it back and stuff? Do you see how much he was celebrating and how much that goal meant to him?
It meant a lot to him. So his first goal.
It looked as though he had come through the Arsenal ranks as a youth player, and that was his first goal for his club at senior level. Like it was genuine, just as passionate as what Saka was when he scored his first goal and what Eddie was when he scored his. It was just like in Smith Rowe as well. Just seems so nice to see it. And he's just like, you could see him, he's got that swag about him, like, just fucking scored for Arsenal. Here we go. Let's kick on. Yeah, I could add, because he's adding goals to his game now. But yeah, Jesus' finish, though. Oh my God, what a beautiful goal.
Yeah, Darlow, I thought, was catching him. I thought, shit, Darlow's got him here. Turned him.
Yeah.
Sat him down. Bang.
Quality, wasn't it? Absolutely quality.
So good.
Loved it. Yeah, just a mad 10 minutes at the end, which was... I didn't think we was going to get it. And part of me, like, don't get me wrong, 95% of me is really happy we got a 3-1 win. 5% pissed off because I had 2-1. So I would have had 3 points on the predictions. So yeah, a little bit gutted, but yeah, at the same time, so I'd rather Arsenal win than me. So
yeah, I beat you.
Never mind. Never mind. So yeah, next week we will do the roundups in a bit more detail again.
We will do. Yeah, we'll have a bit more time.
Obviously, international breaks. We'll go through probably a few weeks worth and stuff like that. But and we do have another guest on next week as well, which is good.
We have.
I'm not gonna drop any names. It's a bit of a surprise, but he is on next week. He's a big football man. Big football man. So it'll be good conversations, and hopefully some good insight as well. But yeah, should we chop this here, and then we'll get Johnny's section up ready for the listeners.
Chop this here. Yeah, let's chop this here.
Wicked. Cheers, mate. Thanks as always. Here's Johnny.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey guys, please make sure that you're following us across all of our social media platforms. We're on Instagram, we're on Facebook, and we're on Twitter. So make sure you follow us so you don't miss a single thing. For Instagram, it is @FootballDropPodcast. For Twitter, @FootballDropPod. Or just search us on Facebook, The Football Drop Podcast.
Hey guys, here at The Football Drop Podcast, we'd love to hear all your comments, feedback, and funny stories. If you'd like us to share them on the pod, please email us at footballdroppodcast@hotmail.com. Thank you.
Welcome back. We have a special guest with us today. We've got Johnny. Hi, John. Johnny.
Hi,
John,
guys. Thanks for having me on.
Johnny, nice to see you. Thanks for coming on. So first question, really, first off. Tell us a little bit about yourself and you know what you've been up to and yeah, just give us a bit of a background really on everything Johnny.
Yeah, sure. So I'm a football writer. I've recently released a new book called Match Fit. So it talks about mental health in football. Really wide-ranging book. There's all sorts of topics. Anything from the mental health challenges facing professional players, so whether that be the increased pressure on them, dealing with retirement, injury, addiction as well, which I think is quite quite a topical one at the minute. If you look at Dele Alli's recent interview, for example, with his painkiller addiction. Mm-hmm. There's a few chapters on the managers. So again, similar, very unique job, I guess. Certainly unlike anything I might do in the office and the pressures on that. And then it goes all the way through to the supporters, so how my mental health might be affected by supporting a football team, how I can use football to benefit my mental health. So really wide-ranging, and the aim of it really is to try and help people learn about mental health, specifically their own mental health, I think, so that if they feel like they need to get help, and realistically probably everyone goes through a phase of feeling down at some point in their lives, then they feel more comfortable in doing that.
Yeah, really important subject. That's something that's close to my heart, actually. So I know that's great. So a little bit, the book, is it out now?
Yeah, it came out last Monday, so nearly a week now. It's available on Amazon, Waterstones, quite a few places online, to be honest. So yeah, that's probably the best place to look for it at the minute.
Okay, great. And is this your first book? You've got a couple more out?
It's actually my second. So my first book, it's called 6 Added Minutes. Again, you can find it Amazon, Waterstones, all sort of major retailers online. I wrote that one when I was 19. It was, so when I was still at university, looking to fill the time really over the summer, that's something I kind of need to do if I'm I find if I don't have anything to do, my mind kind of plays tricks on it on itself a little bit, and I can go down into a spiral of depression. Mm-hmm. So that's why I took up writing, really. It talks about my experiences watching the team I support, Sutton United.
Okay.
I've been a massive fan my whole life, really. And we had a great FA Cup run a few years back. Everyone probably remembers it now for the fat goalkeeper that ate pie.
I say Piegate, isn't it? That's the big thing.
Yeah,
about it.
But it's obviously not not the memories that I would have taken from it, of course. Yeah. Given how crazy the run was. So it talks about that and my other experiences watching Sutton. That came out in November 2019. And I just got the bug for writing from doing that. I'd never really intended it to get published. It was just something to do. And yeah, that led me on into Matchfit.
Okay. And That's
impressive, isn't it?
Yeah.
19, he was like, I just need to do something. So you wrote a book.
Yeah, I mean... My mates were saying, we'd always be at the pub and you'd go, do you remember that night against, whoever it might be, like Dover in wherever, or against that Eastbourne Borough away in 2013, and all this stuff. And they were saying, some of the stories that I had, it would be worth writing them down, because some of them were quite different, I guess, to the experience of a Premier League fan. I was one of 13 fans that went to Barrow away on a Tuesday night, for example. The kind of sad case that I am. So they were saying, yeah, write it down, and it's the sort of thing that we would read. And so I was thinking that, I'd be writing a Word doc and sending it on email, and 10 people would read it, and that'd be that. And just again, it comes back to this needing something to do. I thought, well, I've written it now, I might as well try and get it published. And November 2019 would have been nearly 2 years after I wrote it, but got there in the end, and it's led me on to more writing today.
And how did that go? How was the launch of your first book?
It was pretty good. It did really well, because I launched it at Sutton in the bar after the game.
Okay.
A local derby against Bromley as well. The club have always been really supportive. So I got quite a few sales through Sutton fans, basically. Mm. We had a couple of big spikes after it came out. So we got promoted to the Football League in 2021, which was a real underdog story. I mean, we were one of only, I think it was like three non-professional teams in the National League, the conference, that season. And it was COVID season as well, so everything was behind closed doors, and it all felt a bit weird. It wasn't normal. Mm. And the season, we started really well, won our first five games. As the season went on, it was like when Leicester won the Premier League. It changed from, we're trying to get 50 points to stay up, to we might get in the playoffs. And then with five or six games to go, and it literally wasn't until that point, actually allowed myself to think we might win the league here. And when we did, it was a real feel-good story, a massive shock, because you look at some of the teams we were competing against, the likes of Wrexham, for mm-hmm. example. Mm. And that got picked up by quite a bit of mainstream media, so it was on the BBC, Jackie Oakley picked up in it, and that gave it a bit of a spike as well. So I think it's around 1,000 sales now, which is pretty cool. Oh, and it's still still
great.
Still goes, yeah. Thank you. It's still getting a few sales now, actually, from the launch of Matchfit, which is pretty cool.
Brilliant. And how was the launch of Matchfit? How did that go last week?
It's gone well so far. It was so that on Amazon you can see where books are trending, which I've been monitoring it every 5 minutes. we had a spell, probably no more than half an hour, where it was ahead of Messi's biography.
Oh wow!
So that,
do you screenshot so that? Was, that? Like, it's like screen grab, yeah.
Shamelessly. But I thought, got to try and make the most of this. The novelty of being ahead of Messi's book was pretty cool. It was peaked at, I think, 52 in football books.
Brilliant.
Which isn't too bad at all. It's around 60 or 70 now, so still doing pretty well. And then the absolute classic, I launched it at Sutton yesterday. Very similar to 6 out of minutes with not as successful results. The book's not about Sutton, obviously Matchfit, so it was a bit harder to get that target audience in, and we lost, which didn't help. So that I got a few sales of the book yesterday as well, which is great, and hopefully it will stay relevant as time goes on as well.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah, it does. So, yeah.
Talk us through, you know, what gave you the idea initially for Match Fit and what the inspiration kind of was behind it. Obviously, I appreciate there's a little bit of a personal story, obviously, by the sound of it, which started obviously in the previous book. But just, I guess, for the listener's perspective as well as us, you know, talk us through the inspiration behind it all then, if you can.
Yeah, so when I was in my teenage years, really the time that I was writing about in Six Headed Minutes, I really struggled with my mental health. I'd have days where I couldn't really get out of bed in the morning. I'd cry myself to sleep on Sunday quite a lot because I didn't want to go to school on the Monday. And the challenge really came from going from primary school where I knew everyone, it was like literally 5 minutes from my house. I went to a secondary school in like the nearest big town. It's a grammar school. And all of my mates, pretty much, in fact, yeah, literally everyone, went to a different secondary school. So I knew nobody going into secondary school. And I found it kind of hard to adjust to, struggled with that, and kind of never really, till I went to uni, adapted to it. But I wouldn't have known that I had issues with my mental health. If you said, oh, do you have any issues with your mental health? Are you struggling? I would have looked at you, I would have been confused, I think, because I'd never really heard the term mental health. I thought it was just normal for people to feel crap a lot of the time, that, you know, it was a tough adjustment for everyone, so it wouldn't be just me feeling like this. And it wasn't until I went to university that I realised, actually, yeah, I can get help here, like, I don't have to feel this way. So I thought, when I was that age, or at any point really, I wouldn't have gone out of my way to learn about mental health. I didn't know about it, and it kind of suited me to stay in my kind of my lane and not put myself out of my comfort zone to get help. But I've always been obsessed with football, and I've read and will continue to read plenty of books about football. So my thinking is that if I write a book about mental health and football and combine the two, then a lot of people that perhaps don't really understand their own mental health, or even you know, don't necessarily believe in mental health, will be interested enough in the football side of things to buy the book, and then we'll learn something from it. So I hope it's the sort of book that would have helped the teenage version of me when I was 15 to 18, and hopefully people from their teens up to, you know, old age now. I think it's something that can help people learn. But as well as just enjoying the football side of things, I think I've been pretty comprehensive with the research. I mean, it's taken me 3.5 years to write this book. So there's a lot of stuff in there. And I think people will find just the football side interesting. But there is also the learning element that comes almost as an additional benefit. So that's the thinking. And hopefully if it helps one person, then I think it's all been worth it.
Yeah, certainly, yeah. No, I completely agree. And I think you've got some sort of people in your book who professional, former professionals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's 60 odd interviews. So loads of different staff.
Wow.
There's a few big names in there. So Chris Kirkland talks a bit about social media, and he's the ambassador for a social media company now called Yapa, which is trying to promote just the positive side of social media and get away from the negative, so it has no likes, no pictures as well, and it's more about just how you're feeling. So Chris was really interesting. Marvin Sordell was fascinating. So he retired from professional football in his late 20s by choice, just because he felt that he wasn't enjoying it. In fact, well, he felt it was compromising his mental health by playing in such a toxic environment for him. So he still plays football. You know, a social level. He actually plays for a charity team, a charity that I'm partnered with called Better. But he quit professional football because he just felt it was so toxic. Talked to Paul Lambert, so former Norwich and Aston Villa manager, about the pressures of management. And that was really interesting because he's obviously played at the top level, most notably with Dortmund as well. So there are a few big names in there and a few more. I won't go through them all. Which hopefully can make people think, well, if Marcus Bent, if Marvin Sordell, if Chris Kirkland, if Paul Lambert, you know, all people that have achieved a lot in what's stereotypically a macho environment, if they can talk about their mental health, then so can I. And it's a sign of strength rather than a sign of weakness, and it's benefited them to do so. So that's the thinking with getting some of those names in there as part of the interviewees I spoke to.
Mm. And you talk about that kind of toxic culture within football, and masculinity is about you don't feel sad, you don't talk about your mental health, you know, stiff upper lip kind of thing, and you just sort of crack on with it, don't talk about it. And the key emphasis then from those guys and a few other things, and I'm assuming from your book as well, is about talking about your feelings and what's going on for you.
Yeah, I think, like you say, football stereotypically has been kind of just, you know, crack on with it. It's the team above yourself, and you're not expected to voice your own issues in the changing room. But actually, again, coming back to the Dele Alli interview, and there are so many more cases like this that we won't know about, by the way.
Mm.
If you are struggling with your mental health, you're not going to play at the peak of your game. I mean, Stan Coymore was one. I read his book as part of the research, and he said the clubs where he felt valued, he always did very well as a footballer. Southend, Liverpool, for example. Moved to Aston Villa, the club he supported as well, I think. So a dream move for him in theory. And the manager openly criticised him for speaking about his depression. And he did pretty terribly there. I'm sure he wouldn't mind me saying if he happened to be watching this. But his struggles were at the clubs where he didn't feel valued as a person. So football clubs, not only should they be looking after their players on a pure well-being level, which probably isn't the case and certainly hasn't been historically, even if we're being really cynical here and think, you know, clubs only see players as assets, which probably hasn't been too far from the truth, then they should probably still be looking at their players' mental health purely on a performance-based level. And if you've got a player that isn't playing well, isn't happy, and you want to sell him, you're not going to get your sort of 80 to 100 millions, are you, that we see in football these days? It's only when players are at the top of their game.
Mm-hmm.
So really, I think that it benefits the football world as even with the dark side of the industry, if you like, the massive fees and the win at all cost mentality. I don't think that's at odds with mental health. I think maybe that's my point here. It's football and players involved in football will actually be stronger and do better when they're talking about their mental health, which makes that openness a strength rather than a weakness. And the sooner football realises this and moves away from the old school macho environment, the better it will become for everyone involved.
I think there's things out there at the minute, and I've only recently started to watch Ted Lasso. I don't know if you've seen that, but like you can kind of get the sense that that's like his managerial style, and you wonder as well if like things like that are coming into the game more and more now, with that sort of gentle touch and that understanding and that sort of just leading with empathy. Was there, you know, in your discussions and through your book, is there sort of signs, glimmers of hope?
Yeah, I think so. I think there was a few people that said that the younger generation of players coming through now are starting to see mental health and psychology in general as a more important part of their game. So a lot of young players are paying for psychologists to work with them, to work on their mentality, even if the clubs aren't putting it on. And if you look 20 years into the future, the players of today are the managers of 20 years' time. So that attitude will become more normalised. I think at the minute, I think we've made progress in the last 10 years, the same as the rest of society. And managers like Gareth Southgate now are known for leading with empathy. Give it 20 years' time and it will become much more normalised. You probably still do have, I guess you call them dinosaurs in the game now, people that probably haven't have adjusted as much as they should have done. But you'll start to see that as players value psychology and their mental health and well-being more, the old school style of management won't work anymore. You won't be able to just shout at your players all the time to cast off your injured players to treat them as assets, because this is when managers will lose the dressing room, so to speak. So yeah, I do see hope for the future. I do see things like Dele Alli's interview is massive, I think, for normalising mental health conversation, for making everyone realise that whether we like it or not, these things happen. And encouraging people to seek help. Look at, like, you know, Tony Adams back in the 90s, and and his addiction. I mean, that was probably a big step for football when he came forward, got help and continued to play at the top level. There would have been so many more suffering in silence. There still will be. And today, with addiction, gambling in particular, and painkillers, and I think Dele Alli's paved the way for everyone to realise that they can work on their mental health and stay at the top of their game and will benefit by doing so.
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff. And you sort of alluded earlier to that, the managerial side of things as well. So not just players, but managers and their mental health and supporters as well, which is something that, to be honest, I never really thought of. But that, yeah, of course, that managers are going to suffer with that. It's a high stress job, and supporters as well. Yeah, you know, when you talk about supporters and mental health, what specifically do you find, you know, has been the issues that you've raised?
Yeah, I actually love that chapter, the supporters one. It's probably my favourite if I had to pick one, because okay. It's like writing about myself. So if someone asks me, why are you a football fan? Why do you go to Barrowell on a Tuesday night? Why do you travel the length of the country to watch a team that at the minute have lost 5 games in a row? Why am I going to Swindon next Saturday to watch a team that have lost 5 games in a row? Well, it's very hard to answer the question logically. Like, if you try and explain it to your girlfriend, your wife, like, even some of your mates aren't into football, it's like, well, actually, how do I explain this?
Yeah.
But you still do it, and nothing's going to change that. I've always kind of pondered over that question myself. There's someone I spoke to called Alan Pringle, who'd done his PhD on why people are football fans. So he's done the proper research into this stuff.
Wow.
And he had a list of reasons, and we talked through them. And it's like looking in a mirror, honestly. So a big thing, his headline finding is that being a football fan is beneficial for your mental health, which I think, as much as we joke, oh, it's, you know, my mental health suffers by watching Sutton, like whoever your team, whoever you support, I think it is beneficial. So there's a sense of hope is the main thing for me. So I can be having a terrible week, but I know at the end of it, if I can just get through to Friday at 5 o'clock, then on Saturday I'm going to meet up with all my mates, have a good time, go to the football. We might win, but if we lose, then the sense of hope just renews itself for next week. Like, I still think we have a good chance of winning next week, and even if we don't, well, we might. We're going to win at some point. So that sense of hope is always there to pull you through. I think the community side of things is really important as well. A lot of the time with depression and anxiety, it causes you to become withdrawn. So when I look back on my teenage years and I was suffering with depression and anxiety, didn't really want to go out because I was in a state of low mood. I couldn't bring myself to go out. If I was feeling slightly better on that sense, that my anxiety levels would be quite high. So I didn't really feel confident meeting new people. I still don't, to a point. But football's a good way of making sure that at least once a week I'm going to go out of the house because I'm not missing a game. So I'm going to see all my mates on a Saturday. I don't even have to try and organise anything because we all know that the meeting point is Gander Green Lane at 2:30. We're going to go to the bar for a bit and go to the game. Or, you know, when it's an away game, you just put a train time in the group chat. That's it. We're on the 9:03 or whatever to Swindon.
Oh, wow.
And it's all sorted. And I think catharsis as well. If I've built up my frustration through the week, then on a Saturday for 90 minutes, I can shout at the players, the referee, the opposition supporters, have a bit of a sing-song, get it all off my chest for 90 minutes, knowing that it's kind of socially acceptable to do that. You know, I'm not going to go out get in a nightclub fight or anything like that, take my frustration out the wrong way.
Nice.
And then go back to life on Monday morning. So there's so many things in football that can help supporters, things that are part of general mental health conversation that are just inherent in football. I absolutely love that chapter. It was really insightful, kind of looking almost into my own mind and of many other people that watch football as well, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It's interesting, that whole like 90-minute piece about watching a game. Like, I know that we've gone to games before and, you know, we could have a shitty week and, yeah, as you said, you know, you're feeling in a low mood or whatever. But for that 90 minutes, even if you're watching a game on TV or whatever, nothing else matters.
Mm.
Like when you are passionate about your football team, what, as you said, whatever team it may be, could be Arsenal, it could be Sutton, it could be know, as you said earlier, Dover or something like that. And yeah, you're right, for that 90 minutes, you just, nothing else matters in the world. Like, your life is almost put on hold.
Yeah, yeah, it's a great distraction. I think it's great to have that respite. Even though you've got to go back to your normal life afterwards, you know you're at least going to have that period. And it's the same when you're playing football as well. When I'm playing five-a-side on a Wednesday night for 40 minutes, my mind is just completely on the game. You don't have the capacity to think elsewhere. Even if you wanted to, you've got to concentrate where your next pass is going. Are you tracking your runner?
Yeah.
Where absolutely. Are your teammates? So playing football as well, very similar to being a supporter, especially with the social side, being a team sport. I think it's a great thing to be involved in. And certainly I don't play at any great level. But just playing socially on a Wednesday, it keeps me going, it keeps me ticking over, something to look forward to. So there's a chapter as well focused on grassroots players. So we're talking like five-a-side Sunday, Sunday morning, like hungover from the night before, happy marshes sort of thing. It's something everyone can do. And it's something I'd really encourage is a way to stay on top of your mental health through using football basically for your benefit.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, completely agree.
Yeah, it is just a crazy, crazy effect football can have. Positives and negatives, of course. There's always two sides of the coin. But I guess from like a wider perspective, what do you think? I guess football generally, whether it's grassroots or the top tier of like Premier League, etc. What do we need to do more so to raise awareness of all of this?
Really good question. I think it's all about normalising it. The big name players talking about their mental health makes it okay for other people to do so.
Yeah.
Making it normal to think that mental health is a strength. So pointing out the benefits in that. If you're feeling more on top of yourself, really. If you're feeling good about yourself, you're going to play with confidence, you're going to feel better. It's the same for me in an office job than it is for someone on the football pitch. As to how the football world itself can help the mental health of its players, I think there needs to be structured plans in place for some of the challenges that players face. So one thing that I found really interesting and a campaign that I now support is to end all gambling advertising in football. I think addiction is a big issue, not only for players. You look at like Ivan Toney getting a gambling related ban, for example, but also supporters. So if you've struggled with a gambling addiction in the past, you've been recovering for that for a period of time, 6 months, say, and then you go back to the football, and all you're seeing is bet here, bet there, bet everywhere. Just adverts on shirts, billboards at the side of the pitch, in the stands. It's a very tough environment to send people back to. So I think, and I get there are challenges with it because the money from sponsorship can be big for clubs, even at a more micro level. I know there are podcasts with gambling sponsors, and it helps them keep going.
Yeah, so it's not going to be something, isn't it? It can be make or break for certain clubs of certain levels as well. That $200,000-$300,000 a year or something will pay the players or something like that. And, it keeps them, as you said, ticking over to a point.
Yeah, I mean, it would have to be a managed decline rather than pulling the rug out overnight. But I think that there's research there that suggests it can be done. Certainly, it's not going to be by next season that we have no gambling advertising, but there are clubs that are signed up to what's called the Big Step. So that's the campaign by a charity called Gambling with Lives to end all advertising, gambling advertising, sorry, in football. So Luton Town has signed up, for example. Not done them any harm. They've managed to take themselves up to the Premier League. Tranmere Rovers, Forest Green, both clubs that are reasonably well run sustainably in League Two, no financial issues there. So it can be done.
I think we've seen it be done as well with like smoking, alcohol, things like that. So it definitely can be done. There's just a reluctance to do it, but gambling addiction is huge. Like I know people that have been affected by it personally, and I just think what more needs to happen for us to actually do something about it.
But I'm sure there was something came out maybe it was middle or early last season with the Premier League stuff about shirt sponsors. Wasn't it Forest was scratching around for someone and they needed, and they was going to have a betting company or something, and I'm sure something came out about it saying that not, you know, they can't be front shirt sponsors after, I think, 2026,
maybe, yeah, 2027. 26-27 season in the Premier League.
Yeah.
They're to phase out sponsorship by, from the front of shirts, I think it is.
But there's still stuff going on at the back. And Arsenal, I hate slating my own club, but we literally announced this week that we've got a global partnership with a betting company. And I saw it, you know, plastered all over LinkedIn, and there's a lot of people just absolutely slating it, whether they're Arsenal fans or just general football fans, or not even football fans, just, you know, every Tom, Dick and Harry. Everyone is slating that sort of idea. And I thought, yeah, I think you're kind of right. Like, clubs need money at the end of the day, but when you're a big club like that, you can get a sponsorship somewhere else. You know, there will 100% be companies that will go, we'll step in and do that, that have got a better reputation from a social standing, you know?
I think it's important that we feel comfortable criticising our own club. I mean, looking at Sutton, when we played Arsenal in the FA Cup fifth round, we had a one-off shirt sponsorship with Sunbet. You can imagine how that went down. there was a big kind of argument within the club. A lot of our fans criticised the board for it. So it got us a lot of money, and I understand why they did it, because we're not the sort of club that makes millions of pounds in TV money. So we had the money, something like $500,000, and it was to pay for the academy changing room. So it's like, there's a reason we've done it, but the Sun has questionable links with the football world anyway.
That's an understatement.
That was a very polite, professional way of saying that, Johnny.
And it's the betting side of it as well, when you're thinking, well, this is not a great combination here. And sure enough, that paved the way for Piegate, and that's a whole other podcast topic, really.
Yeah.
But, the club did apologise for it, and I certainly don't think it's anything they're going to do again. So I think it is important that, say, when you see something we don't like with our clubs, I think that's one of the things we can do to help challenge it. And look at Mason Greenwood and the pressure from fans around that. And that's helped what I think is the right decision ultimately to be made. So there is fan power at play here.
Yeah,
certainly. I mean, we spoke about that last week, didn't we?
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, the Mason Greenwood stuff was a touchy subject, and it's... Yeah, as you've rightly said, it's probably an episode, a whole different podcast topic, I think, for that. But, I mean, the power of the fans is incredible. You know, certain things... I mean, the Super League thing was the big example, wasn't it? Where every fan, basically football fan in the world, kicked off, and it's not spoken about anymore. You know, and, it, you know, everyone sort of left there pretty much straight away. So, you know, I think fans need to do our own part of that as well, whether it's pushing sponsorships, whether it's, you know, kicking off about these betting sponsorships or whatever it may be. Maybe we need to do something like that from a fan perspective.
And further education and support on mental health as well, I think, is certainly needed, because it's you don't see any kind of advertisement or anything like that from any of these clubs, really, unless I'm completely mistaken, on what people can do to improve their mental health and how they can improve their mental health. I can't think of anything where I've seen anything, really. I know they do things locally within their local community as teams, but nothing else.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. A lot of every Premier League club has a community foundation, and the Premier League provide funding for that. And most of these programs have some sort of mental health arm, but it's not really shouted about. So Newcastle are probably an exception, and Everton as well do very good work, I know of. Newcastle, I featured them in the book. I went up to the Premier League game against Aston Villa, where Be a Game Changer, which is their mental health campaign as part of the foundation, was really given a shout out. It was plastered all over the warm-up shirts. It was on the advertising boards before the game. They had a big banner, which I think they showed during lockdown as well, actually, when the stadiums were empty, and that was showing on the seats. So I think the provision is to an extent there, and it can be better for a lot of clubs. But it's something they can shout about more. I mean, Newcastle have a great community programme. If the club can keep shouting about it, then more people get help.
Mm.
There are cases, and plenty of cases, that I saw in the book at Newcastle where fans have received mental health support. It's similar to me, like not even knowing they were struggling with their mental health because the club's badge is on the programme. You know, there are people that see Newcastle United, it's like a religion. And for every Premier League club, really, it's the same. So if you see the Newcastle United badge on something, you're attracted to it. You're not just going to disregard mental health because the Newcastle United badge legitimises it. It gives it an importance and you pay attention to it.
Absolutely.
So I think that's probably the main thing where clubs can help their supporters. They've all got the provision there, without me knowing the details. Just shout about it. Really promote it. And that will draw people in and people will therefore... Yeah, through your football is your excuse essentially to receive mental health support, and that's I think it's so powerful. Football for so many people is a massive part of their lives, and people have an affinity to their clubs, which can be used, for good really.
That's great. If you could change, I don't know, remove what you know, whatever it is, you could make one thing different. What would it be in football for you to improve mental health?
Ooh, what a great question. So the gambling one is a kind of obvious one for me. Let me see if I can think. I can think of a few things. So I think if a gay player came out in Premier League, that would be massive.
Mm-hmm.
Not really something I can change, so I won't. I don't think that's my answer. But that would be, I think that would be a big step forward for the football world.
Yeah.
I think the main thing would be more top level players and current players as well talking about their mental health.
Mm.
So a lot of the interviewees in my book were retired players, and it was quite hard to speak to someone who is still playing. A lot of the time their agent was standing in the way. So I think there's a kind of concern amongst people in the football world that talking about mental health will be a negative to someone's value, which is crazy.
Is that a brand awareness thing? Sorry to interrupt, I'm just keen. Because obviously you said about the Newcastle, like the brand awareness side will obviously entice people to come in and it's your football team. But if there's a player, obviously you'll be representing, you know, a mental health charity or whatever. If people don't quite like that, you could potentially suffer abuse from that.
I think it's, from the agent's perspective, it's a player value thing. I think there's a concern that it will be seen as a weakness in someone. So if there's a choice between two identical players for 30 million, one of them's spoken about their mental health and one of them's not said anything, the player who's spoken about their mental health issues will be seen as a liability compared to the player who hasn't. And the two things I'd say about that, one I've already said, is that I don't think it's a weakness. I think if you're able to get mental health help, you'll be more on top of your game.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean that the player that's not spoken about mental health hasn't experienced poor mental health, hasn't suffered from their mental health. They just haven't said anything about it. So I don't think that the openness is what makes you a liability at all. I think the football world gets mental health and mentality confused. They think a lot of people think that if your mental health, if you go through a bad period of mental health, your mentality is all wrong. You're focusing on the wrong thing. So I think it's a common mistake really that football world makes. So if I could change one thing, it would be, it's more of a structural thing than one overnight thing. But more big name current players talking about mental health. Did you see Aaron Ramsdale's thing the other day where he spoke a little bit about that and having a brother, I think, who is gay? I think that sort of thing, we need more of that.
Mm.
You know, current player, top of his game, playing for a top level Premier League side, and he feels confident opening up about things that will help other people and help the gay community, for example. More of that, and I think that will have such a massive knock-on effect for people like myself and you guys that follow football. So I think that's probably the way we can get the most change.
Yeah,
that's a really makes good sense. Answer. Yeah, yeah. I really like that. Okay, so should we talk a little bit about, I guess, the Premier League generally? Do you follow much of it, Johnny? Obviously, being a Sutton fan.
I don't, to be honest. I used to, when I was very young, I used to watch Arsenal. I went to Highbury a few times.
That's natural. That's natural, Johnny.
I can't say I've really, since they moved to the Emirates, I've never really bothered with it, to be honest. I'm from very close to Sutton's Ground. So it's basically, as soon as I became old enough to go out of the house on my own, my dad's from Middlesbrough. He's a Middlesbrough fan. So okay. He was never interested in going to Highbury. So when I was old enough to go out by myself and not drag him along, he's like, right, you know, go wherever you're going to go. But your pocket money is whatever it was, £20 like a month, whatever. I couldn't go and watch Arsenal at the Emirates on that. And my season ticket at Sutton was £20 and it was just down the road. So that's how I ended up going to watch Sutton. Yeah. You can see how you get drawn in.
Yeah, 100%.
The pricing strategy works as well. In terms of watching the Premier League, I mostly follow it through mates that support teams. So I've got my flatmate who's an Arsenal fan. I've got a close mate actually who's a Bournemouth fan.
Interesting.
So he's got an interesting relationship with the Premier League. He likes seeing his team at the top level, but he's used to League One, League Two, the Championship, and he hates the fact that he has to go to games on Sunday and Monday nights. He likes the Saturday 3 o'clock.
Yeah,
which I find quite interesting. So I follow it a little bit. I couldn't tell you the last time I'd watched a full 90 minutes of Premier League games, to be honest. a long time ago, probably with Middlesbrough. I'm not a close fan, but I do keep an eye. I've got a fantasy Premier League team, so I've got to do my best.
What is it on the the like official Premier League one, or
we've got. I'm in so many different league tables, and every time I just don't finish bottom. Just avoid finishing bottom. Yeah. Keep my dignity intact. That's a successful season.
We'll send you our code. You can join ours after. But I mean, I've already given up with it. I'm 4 weeks in. I think I'm 74th in our league so far. I haven't checked it obviously today, but I'm one of these players that I'll play for a while and just go, oh, I'm way too far behind. Forget about it till about January time. Do a load of transfers, play your wild card, and then middle of Feb, I give up again, and then wait till the end of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I always pretend that I don't look at it. I'll tell all my mates I'm not interested. I have to, because otherwise I'll be so far behind. So every week I'll be like, I'm not interested. But just stay on top of it enough that I don't finish bottom. I think this year I could be in danger, to be honest. So if I do join your league, and I'll rival you for that bottom spot, I'm sure. So
there's about 10 of us that will vie for that, mate. Yeah, so good luck.
I'll be there.
Anything else you wanted to
I just about? So I just wanted to just ask. So Sutton, tell us a little bit more about that. So where are they in? What division are they in? What position are they in? How much is a season ticket now? If it, in comparison to £20 a few years ago,
a bit more than that.
Is it?
So we're in League Two now.
Okay.
Which is the highest level we've ever played. We spent 123 years, our whole history as a non-league team. We got promoted in 2021. So we're the newest team, I think, to have been promoted to the Football League for the first ever time. We're very much living a dream. Most of my life watching Sutton, we were playing in front of crowds of 500 people in the Conference South, and it was quite a relaxed, family-friendly atmosphere. And I enjoyed it because you go with your mates, and I think it was £2 ticket for under-18s, as well as £20 for a season ticket. So, you know, no one was struggling to afford that. And it was great. Then in 2016, we got promoted to the Conference Premier, which was probably the highest level I thought we were ever going to play at and the highest level we'd ever played at the time. Did well in that, had the FA Cup run. That brought in over £1 million, and that was a big change. Got promoted to the Football League in 2021, which was, we kind of felt like there was almost a glass ceiling for part-time teams like ourselves. It was practically impossible for us to win the league. I mean, we had, for example, our captain was a builder, our left back worked at Waitrose, we had a centre back who worked in a car dealership, and we were playing against all these professional teams and we won the league, and it's like, okay,
yeah, how the hell's this happened?
And I still can't really get my head around it, even things like we're in FIFA now. Little things like that, and it's very, very odd for someone who spent their whole life watching a non-league team, and thought I would spend my whole life watching a non-league team. We're 23rd in the league, so we've not started very well. This is our third season in League Two, so we've done well to get this far, and every season it's like just staying up isn't an achievement.
Yeah, but it's gone to show it's not a fluke, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, 2-3 seasons in there.
It's... Yeah, I mean, we nearly got in the playoffs in our first season. We finished, I think we had the highest points total that missed out on in the playoffs in years, which was typical. Wow. But we've got to, our ground is still, it's falling apart, really. It's barely changed in years. It's still really a Conference South ground. We've got to spend a lot of money bringing it up to standard for Football League stuff. So that's costing us a lot of money. So our playing budget is next to nothing. We've got the lowest budget in a division, I'd imagine, by some way. So it's just anything above the bottom two is a bonus. So I'm not massively surprised we've struggled at the start of the season. I think we'll get better. Our manager is, I think he'll end up managing probably in the Championship or Premier League at some point. We're the first team he's managed, and he got us promoted to League Two. So watch out for him, Matt Gray. Okay. It's really one to keep an eye on. I think for now the ambition is stay up for a few years, settle in League Two if we can, and then you never know. We're based in London, so we've got a good catchment area. Our crowds are averaging around 3,000 now, so we've gone up sixfold in a few years. So it's all gone very quickly. It feels a bit like the old Wimbledon in the 80s, but without the external investment. We've kind of done it organically so far. You never know where we might end up, but for now it's just survival, I think.
Yeah, makes sense. Well, if you're ever down at Margate, Hartsdown Park, give us a shout. We'll come meet you for a beer.
We'll come meet you
and we'll watch the game together or something. Hopefully that's with Margate sort of being promoted, not with Sutton coming down.
Perfect. Well, I think we'll end the interview here. But Johnny, I just want to say a massive thank you.
Thank you for coming on, mate.
It's a real tough subject to talk about. It seems to be a faux pas at the moment, but it is easing, and I'm glad that we can kind of be part of that to kind of get that mental health route out there a little bit more. So I really do appreciate your time.
I agree.
Listeners, we will post a link to both of Johnny's books at the bottom of the episode. Make sure, go and order it, or go to Sutton, and Johnny might even have a copy there, you never know.
Signed.
Yeah, he might even do a cheeky sign for you, you never know.
Take like 50p off the value.
But no, thank you very much, and we'll speak to you guys soon. Thank you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Only football can make you feel like this.